for Lickin' on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you on the podcast. It is Monday, August 30th, 2021. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals. And our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. Hope you all had a great weekend. I had a great weekend. And thanks to one of our new sponsors, SnapDocs, Amy Moses, who runs marketing there. And they just had a major sponsorship out at the CMBA at the Western Secondary. And I heard from Jennifer from the CMBA, who was at this football game. That's what I'm trying to get to. It's like we went to a football game, pregame, and watched Trevor Lawrence throw for the Jacksonville Jaguars. They did a great job. Very impressive. And, of course, they beat the Cowboys. It was a great time. Got a tour of the Cowboys Stadium. Thanks to SnapDocs. Then got out on the field. Thanks to SnapDocs. Had a great corporate suite. Thanks to SnapDocs. Had a great time. So anyway, Amy Moses is giving you a shout out here at the top of the program. Thanks for a great weekend. And then we were talking on the program. You all dialed in earlier. We get a chance to visit. And Paul King, who is our business manager for DL2 Productions, which produces this podcast, made us aware of the big announcement and a segment on CNBC where UWM plans to accept cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, in payment. And they're planning to do that around the third quarter of this year. So that is raising some real interesting issues. So we're going to get Alice's thoughts on that. And what does this mean? Anyway, it's good to have you with us, everybody. In the Hot Topic segment today, we've pre-recorded a call with Stephen Cooley, the founder and CEO of Art Versus Math. We're going to be talking about marketing business intelligence. Stephen's one of the top people in the industry on this topic. I'm looking forward to sharing with you that interview in the Hot Topic segment. Also, for other pre-recorded topics and podcasts, you can check out industrysyndicate.com. They do a great job of hosting and help supporting and promoting a number of podcasts. So check them out there. Also want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America, as well as Finastra, as well as Lenders One and the Mortgage Collaborative, as well as the Community Mortgage Lenders of America. Incelerate, friend and the group there do a great job on helping you connect with the consumer, creating a great consumer experience. Anyway, also Knowledge Coop, as well as Mobility MMI, as well as Modix, as well as a number of other sponsors, all of which you can see on our sponsorship page on our website. Check it all out. Especially, I want to say thank you to Rob, Les, Alice, Alan, and Matt for their contributions each and every week to the podcast. Let's get over to the MBA's Mortgage Minute with Rob. What do you have for us?
Hi, I'm Rob Van Rapport. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Late last week, the U.S. Supreme Court lifted the CDC ban on residential evictions in a 6-3 decision. The majority opinion said that the CDC had exceeded its authority by issuing a new evictions ban through October 3rd, earlier this month. While the court has invalidated the CDC's national eviction moratorium, some state eviction moratoriums are still in effect. MBA will continue to provide recommendations to improve the distribution of the $46 million in emergency rental assistance to help landlords and tenants in need. And according to MBA's latest forbearance and call volume survey, the number of loans in forbearance is 3.25%, and an estimated 1.6 million homeowners are currently in forbearance. That's it for this week. Thanks for joining us.
Good to hear that those forbearance numbers are coming down. The question is, what's going to happen to the market, supply, housing supply, when this all goes away here? And can the current administration resist the temptation to extend it in some way, shape, or form? So get some more information on insights of that, maybe from Alice later on. By the way, thank you so much, Rob Van Rapport, for sending that in. I love that report. Appreciate our partnership with the MBA. If you are not registered for the conference, please do so immediately. That conference is filling up. The hotels are filling up around that area. And it's going to be a really good annual conference in San Diego. Really looking forward to that. And also sign up to be a member of the MBA and also the Mortgage Action Alliance app. Let's get over to Les Parker. Let's get over to Les Parker with this week's TM Spotlight. and a macro view of the markets, along with Les's music parody. What do you have for us this week, Les?
PM Spotlight Soundbite is brought to you by PowerSeller, making hedging easy.
Jay. Coming out, so stocks better get this party started. On Friday, Deadpan Powell won by affirming everyone. Fed Chairman Jay Powell said that the progress on inflation justifies reducing accommodation. Still, employment, though on the right path, is not quite where the Fed wants it. So after waiting for Jay's Jackson Hole punchline, stocks see the party ending after a warning. As a result, bonds need to stop worrying about inflation bottlenecks and high pay. Enjoy the punch bowl, Jay. Coming up, so bonds better get this party started. These views are my own. Get a last call at tmspotlight.com.
That's that music die off a little bit there. And if you start talk about letting the party stop, they stop the forbearance program, But if they start the tapering program, taping her out of the investments, that could have another impact on it. So lots going on in the markets. Jay Powell, that was he was reasonably predictable last week up in Jackson Hole. But we got Matt Graham here with an update from what is the markets and how they're reacting to all this. So, Matt, what you got, friend?
This is Matt Graham with the MBS Live Market Update. Heading into last week, bond yields had flattened out and traded a very narrow, very boring range, the narrowest trading range for any given week in quite a while. The order of business was decidedly Fed Chair Powell's Jackson Hole speech on Friday afternoon. Notably, it wasn't in Jackson Hole, it was virtual this time around, but markets were looking forward to hearing what he had to say, because many other Fed speakers have been talking quite a bit about tapering and the tapering timeline and the fact that they want to start right away. And last we heard from Powell was at the late July press conference following the Fed announcement, and he had a pretty balanced approach, saying that yes, there's progress on employment, but we haven't quite met the substantial further progress benchmark, which is what the Fed wants to see before they announce tapering. Then with Delta variant and additional COVID cases throughout the month of August, it was a fair question. Would Powell be a little bit more dovish on rates in light of the pandemic developments? And that was essentially the case. He came out and said that, yes, we have had substantial further progress as far as inflation is concerned. And he even went so far as to say that at the July meeting, he thought it could be appropriate to start tapering this year. But in the very next sentence, although he did acknowledge there had been more progress on the employment front, he was careful to qualify that by saying there was further spread of the Delta variant, and that complicates the outlook going forward. In other words, if we were just making a decision based on inflation, we're definitely there in terms of tapering. But if we are measuring it in terms of substantial further improvement in employment, A, we're not quite there yet, and B, we are concerned about the Delta variant. We also know that the Fed has paid particular attention to the month of September and the reopening of schools, not only because of Delta variant concerns, but also due to employment considerations surrounding parents that may have been waiting for schools to start back up before returning to work after an extended COVID-inspired break. And if those jobs numbers do indeed see a big impact from that, that's not going to be something that even comes through in the data until next month at the earliest, October. And that's why we've been talking about late 2021 being the prime time for a potential taper announcement, and the fact that September was probably a little bit too early. The takeaway from Powell's speech on Friday was that September is probably too early. Bonds reacted accordingly by moving significantly lower in yield. Significant is a relative term in this case, because yields really only drifted up fairly moderately throughout the week. In fact, they never broke above 1.38, and that has, in 10-year yields, by the way, that's been a bit of a technical ceiling that offered support 2 weeks ago as well during that Treasury auction supply week and the aftermath of the last strong jobs report. That sets us up for a range-bound week as we wait to digest the new jobs report, which will be out on Friday morning. In addition to the jobs report, we have other significant data coming up this week. Case-Shiller home prices and FHFA home prices, not huge market movers, but interesting to the mortgage market nonetheless. Those are both on Tuesday. Pending home sales already out for the week, down 1.8% versus forecasts of 0.4% increase. MBA is releasing their weekly application data, as always, on Wednesday morning, followed shortly by ADP employment. That seemed coming in at 625 versus 330 last time. 625 still isn't a huge number when it comes to repairing the damage done to the labor market by COVID. So it'll be interesting to see where that actually comes in and what the market reaction is. ISM manufacturing, same morning. It seems staying strong at 58.7, but that would be a little bit less than the 59.5 last time around. Then on Thursday, jobless claims with us as always. Those haven't changed much from this mid-350K range. And then we get NFP on Friday. It's expected to come in at 750K versus 943 last time. There's always a wide range of estimates when it comes to that data, so we wouldn't be surprised to see something closer to or even over a million. And on the negative side, it wouldn't be a surprise to see things under 300. In general, forecasting NFP has been a much taller order since the pandemic. And then after NFP, the data for the week rounds out with another important report, ISM non-manufacturing at 10 a.m., and that's seen coming in at 61.8 versus 64.1 previously. So that'd be a pretty notable drop, but 61, anything over really 55 is solid economic growth if you ask the services sector, which is what non-manufacturing represents. Bottom line, we'll be paying attention to that range, 1.22 to 1.3 in 10-year yields, looking for a breakout before NFP. That'll be a taller order, but a breakout after NFP is more likely, and it could set the tone for the entirety of September or until the next significant development happens with respect to the pandemic. A significant development in that sense would either be a major surge in case counts and translation to the real economy by a, you know, schools closing down, people leaving the job again, care for their children that can't go to school, etc. Or on the positive side, the Delta variant cases subsiding and no major impact filtering through to the real economy. In which case, I think the Fed's tapering timeline would be accelerated and the markets would react as such preemptively before we even get to that late September meeting. That's all for now. Back with you guys next time. Hope you have a great week.
Good job, Matt. Appreciate it much. What's going on with the Powell announcement and then the tapering talk? So where does this all leave us? Well, we'll get some more perspective on it throughout the week. A couple of things that I want to get into also was some of the conference recently. We had the TMBA conference this last week up in Dallas-Fort Worth area. That was Snapdocs was there, did a great job. But also the CMBA conference was really well attended. So I'm really stressing people are going back to conferences, folks. Someone wrote about that. And first of all, they said Snapdocs parties were amazing. Amy and the team did a great, great job on, at both events. CMBA, they were, this person was at the CMBA event at the secondary, Western Secondary. And they said it was just amazing. Never heard of these growl bowls or something. That was a giveaway that they had there. So I have to learn more about that from Amy. But anyway, a lot going on in the secondaries and world and these conferences. So be sure to get signed up for MBA. Several people said, I just signed up as a result of mention on the podcast. So glad to hear that we're prompting some of you all on. Alice, always fun to see you at these conferences. You're going to be able to make it this year to the annual conference? Hopefully so.
You know, I'm still checking on that right now with my schedule.
I hope you can stay tuned on that. We definitely want to see you out there. So Alice Alvey, what do you have as far as a report today on what's going on in the legislative update?
I think the main legislative update item I wanted to bring to everyone's attention, I feel like a little bit of water under the bridge at this point, because the comment period for the HUD disparate impact rule did close last week, but we just got MBA's response to this proposal, and it really did pull together some puzzle pieces that I thought were really helpful and I want to share with our list. So for those of you who've been in this industry for a really long time, you know that our challenge has always been that for fair lending, the way it's been treated is if just through your data, a regulator could look back. So in this case, it would be the CFPB who oversees this rule. In the old days, it was HUD. And if they could look back at your data and see that particular minority were disparately impacted by any policy that you had, then you could potentially have a problem. And it wouldn't have to be that you actually had a policy in writing. It just could be the way the data rolled out. As lenders, we've always had to constantly look at our data to ensure that something we had wasn't inadvertently causing disparate impact. So that's essentially how the 2013 rule was still written, that an auditor could look at data and kind of have 20/20 vision looking backwards at your lending pattern. So there was a change with the Supreme Court that came out, and 2015, when the Supreme Court came on the decision that we refer to as Inclusive Communities project, because it was Department of Housing and Urban Community Affairs out of Texas versus Inclusive Communities Project. And under this, Supreme Court recognized that there really does have intention. There has to be more than just data. There has to be more put on plaintiffs to prove that the lender intentionally tried to create a disparate impact to a particular group and not just a reverse look back at data and try and kind of back into was there something that happened. So what's been going back and forth is whether or not HUD in this new proposed rule is going to just revert back to their old ways, revert back to 2013, and ignore the recent Supreme Court ruling. HUD is this as a result of President Biden issuing a memorandum that HUD needed to go back and take a look at this. So you've heard me talk about this on our show a couple of times because HUD has been trying to align a court decision. Then President Biden came out with the order to say, take a look at this, ordering the department to take all steps necessary to examine the effects of the 2020 rule, including amending that 2013 rule. And so it's really now a conflict. In the last round of this, HUD is saying they received 45,000 comments. And so here we are again with entire industry saying this is not reasonable to go all the way back to the 13 rule. We need to keep in mind the Supreme Court decision and need to make sure there's more structure around what the plaintiff needs to present in a fair lending case. So more to come on this. The MBA got together with the Consumer Bankers Association, the Independent Community Bankers, and the American Bankers Association, as well as the MBA, all got together on this comment for them to make sure that we don't go back in how we're interpreting this and ignore the Supreme Court ruling. So we'll see what happens. This does have a big impact on all of us as lenders, and we want to make sure we aren't going to get caught for things that we didn't intend to have happen or get cited for things we didn't intend to have happen. Maybe it's a good call for Mitch Kider future if this gets any further along the path. That's my summary for lenders today. We're still in flux over the HUD proposed rule for fair lending and more to follow. And then, Dave, I think you wanted to talk about the Bitcoin announcement.
This Bitcoin news that they featured, UWM's announcement that they're going to accept them. CNBC, we just played that clip. I would like to play it, but I don't have permission to do that from CNBC, so I don't want to violate any copyrighting laws. But Google that, folks. It's a real interesting article, and it raised some real good questions. And Alice, you were first to ask one of the pertinent questions. Is it traded? Is it turned to cash if you make a payment in Bitcoin? Is it automatically create a taxable event? And does it get converted, or do they hold on to it as a Bitcoin? And if that's transferred, what are the implications? I'd love your thoughts on it. We'll get Alan in on it in a minute.
Well, you know, I don't have answers. I think I had, lot of questions came to mind, right? Yeah, from what I recall in the clip, the reporter had a few of them too and said, and we reached out to the company and have not heard back, at least at the time of that recording, and that was a couple of days ago. So I think my biggest question was, if I'm any company and I'm accepting the bit, how am I showing that on books, right? And am I now using that as an asset that's going to potentially continually appreciate on my book, right? If I'm a consumer, do I really want to give that away like that to my bank? Why wouldn't I cash it in and essentially giving an appreciable asset to my lender? I'm confused. Yeah.
But this isn't something new to you because you've also had several customers you were talking about on the pre-show, and you actually have a bit of a policy and a procedure and some of this. Any insights that you can share with us?
Yeah, I think we're just following the guidelines, right? So we've got Fannie and Freddie as far as acknowledging that it's out there, but you still have to liquidate it if you want to use it as funds to close. And so when we've had customers who were taking this approach, you know, we've got to actually try and coach them into, all right, how do you document that it's actually yours? Because the whole point behind Bitcoin is no one knows whose it is. But when we get it, we need it as source of funds to close. Okay, we actually have to document that who owned it. So we do have to walk customers through how to dig that out of their account statements. And there is a way that it be done. And so that's what we were chatting about. So our lender's going to go through that as part of the process to accept. We'll see. They're going to be first in, and who knows if they'll share with us how they're actually doing it.
Fascinating. We'll try to get a hold of Matt at UWM. He's a friend, someone we know real well. So it'll be interesting. Also, I want to say this. When I was at the Lenders One conference back in Orlando a couple of weeks ago, I ran into Mary Perello, who is client relations manager with Sandler Law Group. And they also have a company that's called Assurity Technologies, and they have a risk exec product out there, and it measures based on your HMDA. Chris Gray was the guy that's the vice president of business development there, was at the conference, and in his booth, he was literally, a new company would come in, would bring up their HMDA data, download it all right there in the booth, live data, and then start going in and analyzing it and very interesting. So they're not an advertiser, but I'm going to give a plug out to Mary and Chris, who we did get some time with them last week on a phone call. And we're going to have to do a demonstration of their product to better understand that. But I'm sure there's other companies out there that do that. But that one, the way they went about it was really raising some eyebrows and impressing some people there at the Lenders One conference where we all were together in Orlando a few weeks ago. So very interesting stuff. Alice, the amount of data that sits there, it just seems like one huge liability. And you've got to have the tools to go in and analyze it to see what is the things that are maybe not so glaring, but that are there that your data reviews that reveals that you don't know about. So I know you guys got that covered, Alice, because I know you know that real well.
We do, but you're right. There are a couple of companies out there, and it's something we all have to have once you get to a certain size.
Yep, very much. Alice, thank you so much for being with us this week. This has been Alice Alvey. We've had on here CMB Vice President of Education and Training at Union Home Mortgage. Appreciate Bill and Al the lending us, Alice. They do value her, and we value her, and I know you listeners value her, so glad that they let her come on the podcast and continue to do so. Now, over 12 years on the podcast. So excited. Let's get over to Alan Pollock, who's here. Alan, I'd love to get your thoughts on the CNBC news. It's a featured story that they did on the television.
Yeah.
And they put it out here about Bitcoin. I don't know if you had a chance to go listen to that or you're aware of that. And love to get your thoughts on Bitcoin. And I know what Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have issued and what they're saying, but are you hearing more uses of Bitcoin and more innovation in this area?
Well, yeah. I mean, a lot of folks are allowing Bitcoin to be transferred. If you remember, PayPal and Visa were working on something a couple months ago. Right now, David, one Bitcoin is worth $48,140.30. So what that means is for the folks that bought Bitcoin really, really long time ago, back in the day, you definitely have a nice asset. Ultimately, you can use Bitcoin. Some people will accept it directly. And I've been questioning myself, do they take ownership of the Bitcoin and take the current value of the Bitcoin and translate that back to you as cash? But then they get the asset of the coin and they can decide in the market what they want to do with it. Or does it get transferred immediately? Bitcoin, by the way, you got to go through a cryptocurrency exchange. So I feel that it's being facilitated when you look at like a PayPal as an example that's going to allow you to convert it. They are sort of brokering or they're becoming the exchange, but there's other ways, right? There's Bitcoin ATM. There you got the exchange. There's Bitcoin debit cards. There's peer-to-peer transactions, fake transfers. There's all kinds of ways that you could convert it. So the fact that they're going to accept it, I don't know enough about it, but it clearly looks like either one, they've got a clearinghouse that they're working with or an exchange, or two, they're giving a dollar value for it, and it's something that they'll turn on or turn off based on the market, or they'll change the value of what it converts at, and then they'll decide whether they want to hold the asset or not. So I'm not sure what their current plan is, but clearly we'll see more of this, and it is very interesting to watch this and see it further.
Well, keep us posted. You're definitely a man on technology. What other things are you seeing out there that you'd like to share with our listeners today?
Well, I do want to talk about tapering really, really quick. I mean, I'm scared. I watched the news all weekend, and it's like, we're going to taper, we're not going to taper. And it's kind of funny because, you know, I'm on the market myself to buy another house right now. And what's kind of interesting is what's available in the market. A lot of people just sort of listed, right? They saw what everything else was listed at. And it's, you know what, if I'm going to get out, it's going to be right now. I'm not going to put any work into the house. It's as is, and I'm putting on the market. And you're seeing homes at the same price, at least by me in North Florida, which the prices have exploded, that True. Have never had an update in 20, 30 years, and homes that have had complete updates and they're the exact same price. And it's really interesting shopping this market and then how homes are going off the market because people are trying to grab them right away. And they're bouncing back on the market because they turned out they didn't have the right approval or the home inspection didn't turn up right. It's really a unique scenario. And obviously tapering could, in fact, cause rates to rise, right? From my non-expert opinion. Mm-hmm. So I'm really interested. Inventory has slowed down, we know. End of the mm-hmm. school year, end of the year, summer is over, school year started. We're getting to the holiday months. Again, my non-expert opinion. I'm really curious to see what's going to happen. A lot of people told me to hold and wait. The technology, sure. by the way, that's all available online that tells you home prices in your area. It tells you what the Z estimate is on Zillow. Those things, they're technology, right? They're AI. I don't know how accurate they actually are. So it's all very interesting, but let's get into a couple of quick little tech updates, David. The first one, you know, I have to bring this up because I thought it was so cool. I was reading a bunch of information and it was about Mint.com. And, you know, Mint.com has been around forever, right? And they do mortgage analysis and they do provide leads. just like Credit Karma does. And Credit Karma is a huge source of leads in our industry. Well, this is the quote about Mint. It said, Mint.com is a juggernaut among budgeting programs. They started in 2006, and they're now considered an old-timer. It's free. It's great to learn the basics, but the new ones out there have made their features feel like you're playing with a toy. When I read that, I was like, I have to read this one more time. Just the person that wrote this feels so strongly about new technology and leveraging more modern architecture and the things that are out there. So I bring this up because it's so relatable to the technology in our industry right now. And I'm going to talk about FormFree in a second because of what they're doing on blockchain.
Mm-hmm.
But the industry, we are modernized. Even if you can't take advantage of everything everyone's putting out there today and all the things you're doing, you still have to consider, how are we as a lender modernized? Is it a matter of getting off of too many other antiquated or disconnected systems? Maybe you had Salesforce, maybe you had another system, maybe you have Google Sheets. How do you modernize? How do you not become playing with toys, as this person said about Mint.com? Next thing, David, FormFree. I told you I would talk about them.
Yep.
So they've been working with blockchain, and they just introduced an NFT. It's called Non-Fungible Token. It's
right.
For consumer financial identity. And this is really cool. I don't want to do it this justice. I'm going to reach out to Brent. Brent is a friend, and I'm going to ask him if he can join us and talk about this. They're doing a lot of stuff. They're in a partnership with the agencies, with MBA. Mm-hmm. They're doing a lot of really cool things. So let's get them on here. Let's talk about it. But they're doing a lot with identity management and being able to carry that token with you. And I think that's a really big deal. And a lot of you are thinking, well, what does that mean for me? Is that next year? Is it 5 years down the road? How does it affect my, you know, Alan, what you just said, my non-modernized system? It affects you because someone like FormFree is directly connected with your customers, your consumers. And if your consumers are going to go to Rocket or use these other experiences out there, they're going to be interfacing with you. What's really, really interesting, David, and just to jump ahead on blockchain, you want to go to housingwire.com and just Google blockchain and mortgage. I can even provide the link. This article was in November. It's actually a webinar. It's Mike Cagney, which we know Mike. It's Dan Sagorka from Sagent Lending, and it's Julian Hebron. And the three of them are on a panel talking together. It was hosted by Sagent. It's how blockchain and mortgage will get very real in 2021. If you register online, you can instantly watch. It's an hour and 10 minutes long. It is so good. Go check it out. Again, how blockchain and mortgage will get very real in 2021. And it's almost like what they talked about, especially Mike Cagney, is happening right now. And then, you know, just to jump ahead just a second, you know, I told you last week, David, and I'm going to come back to something really cool, but I told you last week I would come ahead and talk about what has the pandemic done to our landscape, right? This is a great article I found online talking about technology. It was four articles I read, and here's what they said. COVID made us cashless. I know we all use the digital chip cards, right? And you touch them at the supermarket or at the CVS, but then when you did that at CVS, what would happen? You still had to put your code in, right? Well, now we've finally gotten to where it's truly digital. We really have become on our way to be so much more truly cashless. Brokers and originators will soon lose to digital players. That's what this person said. Rocket is reinvesting, as we heard though prior, and mobile is first. Consumers are not looking for the first to call anymore, which is really interesting for the, I won't be able to make it to the hot topic, but when you talk to Stephen Cooley, listen to that again. Consumers are not looking for the first to call anymore. They now have what they need to research and compare. They are now looking to be more educated, and they're looking for a direct relationship. It also says that banks will become more digital and the experience needs to be more personalized. That's what FormFree is doing, right? Get your personalized data with you. Take that token everywhere you go. It's your identity. Now, I can go in all different directions like CVS. You have now have health at CVS. Well, now they want to get into therapy. They want you to be able to go to CVS, get a pack of gum, get a drink, get your photos printed, get some ibuprofen, and be able to take a therapy session. That was just announced. So we are serving consumers. We're trying to gain that audience, that admiration from them. So really just interesting, the entire landscape about what's going on and what we're doing. Again, check out that blockchain article. Really funny, yep. David. I'll leave on a fun note. There's a website out there called Digit Find It. It's Digit Find, okay, so DigitFind-it. And it searches old newspapers. And if you just go to Google and type Digit Find It and then space whatever you're looking for in the year, you find it. So I found an article from 1985. Yep, get this. It was a North New Jersey newspaper, and it was a bank. And they said, borrow from us and pay only 3/4 over prime. And it has an arrow and a circle, like a button that you'd wear on your shirt, like the old days.
Right.
And it says, fill out your info, cut out this button, send this coupon to Broad National Bank in North New Jersey. That's how they were doing mortgage originally. So we totally have come far away, right? That was high tech back then, the fact that they could be in a newspaper each week. The rates, by the way, at that time, even though it said 3/4 over prime, I don't think that was a mortgage rate. That was for a personal loan, but mortgage rates then were 12.5%.
Yeah. One of my clients did it for my birthday last Tuesday, did a video on it, and they were talking about the price of gasoline when I was around. Truman was the president when I was born. It was going back and made me feel really, really, but it was really hilarious. So that's Rick over at Onto Mortgage. A great sense of humor. But there's so much out there. DigitFind-It.com. I'm going to definitely use that one. That's a good tip. A lot of good tips today. Great information, as always. And thanks for giving a shout out to one of our sponsors and someone we are very fond of, and that's Brett Chandler over at Form Free. Some of the things that the innovation they're bringing to the marketplace is like, you got to pay attention to it, folks. Alan, thank you for being here. Appreciate it very much. Have a great rest of your week. If you want to get
you
a hold
too,
of Alan,
man.
Send him notes. Send them to alan@tms-advisors.com. Alan, we love to get your commentary. He's getting a lot of it already. And Alan, your segment is really getting popular, more and more popular, some of the updates of what's going on here. So I'm sure this will be too. DigitFind-It.com. Look in them. Use that one here right after I hang up here. Folks, that wraps up this weekly mortgage update. We're now going to move into the hot topic segment. If you're listening on a downloaded basis, just move on to the next podcast. If you're listening live, stay right here. We're going to move right into the hot topic. Welcome, everybody, to the hot topic segment of the Lickin' and Lending podcast. We're so grateful to have you here. It is August 30th. And we have as our special guest, Stephen Cooley. Stephen, get to be my go-to guy when it comes to market intelligence, how to market on the internet, how to be found. And he is founder and CEO of Art Versus Math. And we're going to be talking today about market business intelligence. So without further ado, let's play the recording that I recorded last week. We have Stephen Cooley joining us again on the microphone. We had Stephen on a little bit ago talking about his latest venture. Stephen, good to have you back.
Thank you so much. No, I appreciate it. I'm really excited. We have some really fun stuff to cover and appreciate you having me back.
That's good. Well, give us a little bit of insights to what you're doing.
Absolutely. So I own a company called Art Versus Math. We do enterprise level marketing consulting, and we also are building some tech. And the big tech push that we have right now is mortgage advisor tools. It is a Captera for mortgage technology. And so if you are a mortgage bank and you are trying to figure out what technology to implement or fuse into your business to help you grow and scale or solve some of the inefficiencies that you have, go to Mortgage Advisor Tools. And we have 20 different categories, over 250 companies, and should be a massive resource for the mortgage industry. So we're really excited about it. Really taken off for the last 4 months.
That's awesome. And it's free to those in the mortgage industry looking for technology. The vendors that are on there pay for having access to the platform, and you do a great job on it. That's what we talked about the last time. But today we're going to be talking about market business intelligence. Stephen, you're a bit of an expert on this, and especially as it relates to how to do so effectively on the internet.
Yeah, so marketing gets thrown into this kind of a cure-all for all things. Sometimes your salespersons, your marketing. Marketing to me is really the underlying things that you're trying to achieve. And it usually requires a deep dive into a business to identify. This is the why of the why almost, if you will. So it's usually get to know the business that you're working with. This isn't just pumping ads out to the internet and whatnot. I mean, if you want to do it effectively and efficiently and really leverage your marketing dollars, you really do have to do quite a bit of work before you get started that involves really getting a deep understanding of the business and then truly connecting it with the audience and their inquiry. So we're going to provide some examples today.
And I think I love that. In fact, everyone knows I called Stephen because he's a resource to me and a friend, saying, hey, I got this new website and launching it and I wanted to put in some keywords. He says, you mean you didn't start with keywords first and get going on that? And I go, obviously I'm showing some ignorance. So let's share with our listening audience, get you to come on and say, if you're marketing yourself, marketing your products, and we'll use some of the ones we're working on as examples. But before someone launches a new product or goes out and launches a website, the amount of work that should go ahead of it, I did it in reverse. Talk about that. There's hours and hours of research going into is what you recommended.
Yeah, you have to find out and research what people are searching and what problems people are looking to have solved. And so a great example that you provided was define your services to me. And you're like, and I'll give one example right out of the gate. You said leadership development. So that is fairly broad. If I'm a leader in a business, the question is, what would I search online to find David Lickin and his services and his company and his business? Mentoring, is it coaching? Is it financial? Is it cultural? Is it values? There's just so much that is involved involved with developing a leader. You know, so really fundamentally understanding exactly how I provide those solutions and what my customer or potential customers or prospect is really challenged with and what they're going to go online and search is the basic fundamental way to start really developing everything. And that's not just like a website. That includes your content. It includes right. the assets, the videos, definitely the website, but maybe your social media strategy, how you hire. It really is quite the development that can occur. And yeah, I've been fortunate to get to help quite a few folks with that over the course of the last couple of years.
It really starts with identifying what is their need. And that's pretty basic in sales. We all know that if you're selling someone and you say, what are the needs that you have? You could go in there and search for that. That's what is so fascinating, how accurate and thorough, or it's almost like taking a vote. It's searching the internet. What's the right words for that, Stephen, where you're going out and determining what are the services people are searching for?
They're search inquiries. They're asking the internet to answer their question. Like, I need help with being a stronger leader. I can't get people to do what I say or follow my lead. I can't get people to do X. I want to improve this part of my business. There's these really fundamental problems that we have in business. And this includes, it's actually all inclusive. This is not business specific to mortgage or software or mortgage loan officers. In fact, it gets really interesting when you do break it down to those type of entities. So even if I'm a single mortgage loan officer and I'm one of many, which they are, I have to solve a problem in the most unique way possible. And I'm serving a local market. And so this is why I always say it's never been more important to be very good at what you do. And it's going to be extremely important to specialize in a certain aspect of mortgage lending. Realtors are a fun example, too, that it's a tough trade, right? You know, at one point, it's going to be a tough trade. I think one point during the year, there was more real estate listings than there were realtors, right? If you wanted to stand out, you were going to have to specialize in solving a certain problem around that. So the example might be, I am an expert at mid-century modern houses. You're trying to buy or sell a mid-century modern house in this area. I'm your guy. And now I'm going to develop my content and everything online around being that expert of mid-century modern. That's a fun example that is applicable.
Yeah, I like how you're going in there and saying it's what is in my market? What am I serving? Mid-century modern is a great example. One's a term that I recently came across when my daughter was talking about housing and houses. I didn't even realize there was that. But if there's a lot of those in your home and you're hoping to get listings of those, why not put yourself up as an expert of that and look at the searches where people are doing? What are the words that they use? Make sure those words are on your website.
Yeah, so the search would be, what's the best type of mid-century modern home? Or what are specific architects that build mid-century modern homes? Where are mid-century modern homes in X neighborhood? Now, all of a sudden, I'm an expert and I'm going to start to now falling into the categories of these searches. And then all of a sudden, I get very organic business without truly helping people. Like, I saw that you are an expert in this. When I search this, this takes some time to develop. You have your initial listings of this. And some of these are hypotheses at best. But like, if I were to pull and audit your customer base, it would probably tell the story of how you really serve and help people. So there is a way to reverse engineer it. And there is a way to really get down to the nitty gritty by even looking at what you're currently doing right now and how you're serving people as it stands. And so build a strategy that way as well.
So if a loan officer is listening to this, or a branch manager or an owner of a mortgage company, it's like, what is unique to you? You say, well, money's green. We all do the same thing. That can look like that on the surface, but with some research and with some help from someone like yourself, you have the skill set to pull out what is unique about that particular company or that particular individual. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I mean, like, that is the challenge of the mortgage industry. We are a commodity. To actually be found in a specific way, it is simply as applicable. I mean, there's quite a few mortgage products that serve as certain circumstances that people search. I'm in X, Y, and Z circumstance. How can I buy a house? I just declared bankruptcy. How can I buy a house? So in the same light, if you were to audit a mortgage business's actual customer base, there is a likelihood that you would probably find a demographic, an occupational, a credit score. There's probably patterns littered in their last 180 days of closed loan. And all of a sudden, now I could fundamentally understand who I'm really serving, why I'm serving them, and I can double down there.
And you're not saying that that's the only category you have to specialize in. That's just one of maybe other categories. So you can go in and own that category by putting the proper words associated, meta tag with your website.
Well, have you ever worked with a mortgage company that's like, we can't sell this X, Y, and Z mortgage product, or we don't do a lot of conventional business, or we don't do a lot of govy business? It's not happenstance. Like, if you looked at national mortgage sales statistics, you can pull them by state and see that it's not that they don't do those type of loans in their location. They just don't get found for that result. And so, yeah, I mean, it's not that you're doomed to what you are found in, but like, it lets you know that that's the work that needs, and it probably needs to be done not just by search. Your entire entity is probably conditioned for the customers that you're currently serving. So, I mean, if you're only conditioned to do conventional business, guess what? It's always fascinating to dig into a mortgage business's back end, their true numbers, find out really who their customers are, because you will very quickly understand, you know, how the entire business, from the loan officers to the processors to their advertising, their marketing, how they're really conditioned. And this is where compliance, redlining, and whatnot issues tend to come up as well. It's really usually the same thing. Not usually bad people that are getting jammed up, that are getting fined by the CFPB, but they are just oddly conditioned not to originate or to skew a certain way. It's usually highly fixable. It's also been kind of interesting work I've gotten to do as well.
Stephen, you're good at this. You've been doing this for years. What are the steps that someone needs to take to start discovering how to be found for all the things that they want to be found for?
I think it starts with product market fit. And so what products do you...
You say market fit. Tell me that.
There's areas of the country with military bases on them. For example, if you don't sell VA loans in that market, you're not probably doing something right. And so there's probably an opportunity to increase your market share of VA mortgages in that market because there's a military base and so on and so forth. So that's one example I've run into. It's like, we want to sell more VA loans. We don't know why we don't do it. There's a military base down the street. You got to get into it. Like, don't they just live there? Like, they're not getting houses. They live on the base. And they're like, no, it's interesting work. But the process really is that. So it's product market fit. Like, what products do you have available and you're willing to sell? And you list them out. What are you found for today? Who are the customers that you're serving today? And really, who are they? Are they men? Are they women? Are they educated? Or, you know, like, you really can look. What are you found for today? Meaning, what are you known for? What is your actual reputation? And start to really, you know, kind of peel back the layers of the onion. Try to really understand, you know, where you sit in the marketplace. Right out of the gate, you're going to develop a results. You're going to understand quite a few keywords and phrases and reviews that really define and really actually provide the true brand that you are today. So, I mean, you can say you're a VA lender all you want, but if the majority of the business you do is not VA, you're not a VA lender. Brand is what you do, what you are, not what you say you are, not your logo. And then from there, you know, you set up some micro and macro goals of what you want to accomplish, what you do want to be found for. And then you start to break down those keywords and that phraseology. You get into it, and then you can provide prescriptions on what it's really going to take for you to start showing up when people do search for that type of keyword or phrase. So, and that's just the beginning. So it's a lot of work.
So it sounds like only the big companies can do it. If it's a lot of work, it takes a lot of time. Is this something only the big companies are able to take advantage of, or can the small guys do that as well?
Yeah, the small guys have to do it. It's unlikely. There's very few mortgage advisors or small shops that are going to be found for thousands of keywords. No, I mean, you can definitely do this at a micro level and be found. And like, one of the things that you want to be well known for is your name. So like, you want to protect your name. So that might be worth buying. It might be worth making sure that your name is that's associated with mortgage and loan officer, your NMLS number. Like, there's a lot of different keywords that are very specific to you and what you do, the location you live in, that you need to protect and figure out how to make sure that your content is, you know, embedded with those things that are very specific to you.
Explain when you say you need to protect. Like, for example, I own the name. I bought the domain, David Licken, Dave Licken, all the various variations, D Licken. I bought all those names and have them. Is that what you're talking about?
Absolutely. Every handle, every time a new social media thing pops up, I don't care if it's for, like, TikTok's a great one. I mean, like, if you, you're like, oh, I'm too old for TikTok, you need to get on there and claim that handle of your name, because somebody else is going to claim it and become super popular And now all of a sudden, when somebody Googles your name, that TikTok persona, infamous for dancing cats, is going to be the most prominent search result when they look you up. And so, I mean, it's very practical. Not all of this is necessarily intricate work, but yeah, every time a new social media, anytime a name handle is available, and a lot of that's free. You know, you keeping a couple of your domains is maybe 10 to 50 bucks a year.
Yeah.
But I mean, the name handle stuff, I think, is important.
When you say name handle, you're talking about a phrase that could be commonly used. Is that what you're referring to in the name
handle? I'm talking about like my Twitter account is at Stephen Cooley. Not at Stephen Cooley 1234. It's Stephen Cooley. Like, I got into Twitter in 2009, a couple years after launch, and I got fortunate and grabbed my handle. You know, and so I have a couple instances like that. Some of them I've had to skew. You can own that. You know, you want to protect your name as much as possible. Are there any other David Lickens out there, you know, that are painting the internet with, you know, things that you might have to battle? I mean, that's the thing. Like, you might have somebody else out there that's doing something, and they might not be in the mortgage business. So imagine a customer looking you up and somebody else is leveraging your name for something else. I mean, like, yeah, you have to protect yourself.
Yeah, that is such a good point. Stephen, one of the things you specialize is doing competitive analysis. You helped me immensely go in and look at that part of it. Talk about what is involved in competitive analysis.
Sure. So it's important that I understand who else out there is serving my prospects and my potential customers, maybe even what they're even doing better than me and what I'm doing better than them, really kind of evaluate exactly what they look like online and what they're trying to achieve. And what's beautiful about this really in the mortgage space, and I don't see a ton of it except at the higher levels, is people really don't do this. I mean, they just don't. And therefore, it kind of is what it is. And I know this because you can actually look up advertisements. You can look up keywords against other banks and other lenders, other software companies and whatnot. And you don't see a lot of competitive bidding on a lot of these terms. So like mortgage is competitively leveraged all the time. You know, so if I was a consultant and I wanted to battle David Licken, I can go out and I can buy David Licken keywords. So when people look you up, Stephen Cooley pops up. That's pretty vindictive stuff. But a lot of folks do that. A lot of folks. And so, you know, it's important to kind of get a breakdown also of your competitors, what they're ranking for, why they're ranking for it. Are they ranking for it because they actually, maybe they do solve that problem in a unique way? Did they just literally put out one piece of content and literally nobody's competing with it? So there's actually usually a lot of room to actually develop content and create strategy to combat your competitor. I don't want to call it easy, but I don't see a lot of competitive marketing being done that is thought out and based on information, keywords, web traffic, social media, but there's definitely a way to do it to increase your business and, you know, your potential customers find the right fit.
What's the next step in this process? Marketing business intelligence.
So the steps that we just discussed absolutely are your initial findings. What do I want to be known for? And what problems do I want to be known to solve when people search specific problems, not general problems? If we did this exercise, remember, we looked up mortgage consulting, and boy, did we find nothing that could even remotely get close to what the services that David Licken provides. So, I mean, we have to be very specific. And then we want to do a competitive analysis and understand, you know, what am I up against? And is there things that I can do to actually combat my competitors in a strategic way, whether it's through content development, advertising. So then the next is going to be ultimately just putting out a strategy that is micro and macro that you can actually optimize and define some key performance indicators. So this is where we hear KPIs get put out. I did a goofy video some time ago and I called them kippies. You know, everyone's talking about, you know, I got to optimize my kippies. And you can see, you know, I'm always just chasing my kippies and I sprinkle the kippies on my marketing and it's going to get better. But the point of key performance indicators is I want to help leaders grow from regional to national. I want to hire 50 loan officers and like specific problems. I then want to start measuring and analyzing if my tactics, if the content I'm developing, the websites, the social media activity, and all the things that I believe that I've strategically put together based on actual hard information is actually working. It's moving the needle. And I'm starting to get better traction on those keywords and those search inquiries. So that is the next step is I have to optimize. It's always a chance that you're not going to hit the mark first go at it. You want to fail as fast as possible, and then you want to pivot. You know, that's what's great about social media. It's what's great about digital marketing is it is relatively cheap to test And when you kind of miss the mark, you can always pivot within an hour, redesign something, re-message it, and throw it back out there and see how it performs. So you have lots of chances at bat for the least amount of money when it comes to digital marketing. And so running lots of tests and optimizing these things to see if you can get the performance that you desire is how you really track that.
Is it important to be ranked in your Google searches? I mean, it seems logical, duh. But I'm finding as I get into this that you don't just need to be ranked. It's ranked for what you want to be known for, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's imperative to be ranked, which is why those services like SpyFoo and Moz and SEMrush should be in the back pocket of any digital marketer that you're working with. I mean, they should be able to tell you, like, where do I rank for this search term, for this problem that I'm trying to solve? And then, yeah, that's another key performance indicator. Like, I want to be found on the first or second page of this. You know, also, you want to talk about websites and your content pages on your website. The worst place for somebody to end up is on your homepage.
Explain that.
All right. So if I have a website and I'm solving and I've built out content on my website, let's say the three services that you offer, you have leadership development, process dysfunction. We talked about this.
Right.
And mentorship. So you have these three key services, three pillars of service that you offer. And let's say for all three of those services you offer, you have five different pieces of content. You have a video, an infographic, and three blogs for each one of those three services. And let's say they all have a little different slant to it. They all have a keyword focus on each. So leadership might be financial, or, you know, actually vision, or, you know, so to give you an example, people look it up. It would be better for them to actually find the blog article and actually enter your website through the blog article, through the video page, or through the infographic page. That means my content is solving my search inquiry. And that's, you know, that your site is actually doing exactly what a website should.
How do you determine that?
Your analytics. So if majority of my traffic, I mean, like Mortgage Advisor Tools is a great testament to that. So it starts on the homepage, because initially I'm forced to drive people to mortgageadvisortools.com, right? I have reinforced that 1,000 times. I have 250 pages of profiles that I need people to discover of various companies. I have 25 different category pages. Okay. So like, so CRM is oddly my biggest category.
Interesting.
We've had like 1,500 folks land on CRM category, unique visitors in 4 months. It's massive. I mean, so that's 1,500 people that specifically are looking for a CRM solution in the mortgage industry.
Wow.
And so like, that's the power of that. So like, that's why I get it confidently say that. So when I talk to a CRM company, I say, look, this is about as filtered traffic as you can get. And so that's where it gets interesting. So when you get traffic that's showing up to for process dysfunction, variables that occur there, you know that your content is really working. And you can see that, man, people are really needing help with this. We need to maybe double down on this. Or, man, maybe I need to do another podcast about this and really help people understand, you know, the fundamentals of how we help people with processes and how we provide mass solutions. You know, if they show up to your website, I mean, like, that's kind of the easiest way to get them. I can get people the Mortgage Advisor Tools. I got a strong domain. It says mortgage in my name. But getting them to, like, how about my appraisal category page? Like, that's a whole
fascinating topic. There's so much in this thing. We could go on and on forever. But the best thing for people to do is just get a hold of you and connect and start a dialogue. What's the best way for them to reach out to you?
Yeah, likewise. I mean, my email is steven@artversemap.com. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Twitter. Like I said, you can follow me on Twitter at Stephen Cooley. But yeah, feel free to email me, steven@artversemap.com. If you have leadership, process dysfunction, and mentorship challenges within your mortgage bank, you know, they need to also reach out to you, right? You know, we're going to continue to work on figuring out ways to optimize and provide folks content and take them through the journey. I think that's really what this is about. You know, these are not customers that we're going to turn on a whim, but, you know, we want to be a part of their buyer's journey. We want to help them fundamentally understand how to improve without selling them anything. And that's the whole point of this, is I want to build content and provide resource without necessarily taking a dollar from you. You know, especially in roles like what me and you have, I think pretty imperative that, you know, we give out as much free advice as we can, you know, before it really matters, and, you know, provide resource so we can help people. And that's what it's really about.
Art versus math. Where'd you come up with the name?
Yeah, it's the battleground of marketing. You know, you either, we talked quite a bit about business intelligence today, you know, and to be tactful and key performance indicators and analytics. And you have all this very complex math type stuff that, you know, we use in marketing. And sometimes a good creative can combat all that. A just awesome, you know, video, a really polarizing creative perspective, whether it be text or visuals or picture, is the source that drives you the most business. And so in my experience and the philosophy that I teach marketing under is art versus math. We have to look at all of it. If you've seen a Mortgage Advisor Tools video, you'll see that, you know, we're swinging the bat pretty hard at being hyper creative, but trust and believe that we are looking very hard at our numbers and driving those results. So that is the tactic that we use. And that's why the parent company is art versus math.
Love it. Very good. Thank you so much for being with us again, Stephen. Great information. Value your wisdom. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your friendship.
Bet. And a good friendship it is. Be sure to check out Art versus Math, the website, as well as share this with your marketing people. It's like sometimes it's a no doubt. We should know this, or we ought to know this, or we do know this. But sometimes it's amazing how many people miss, as I did, some of the things that we need to put in place first before we start marketing our services. Get to know Steve, and his contact information is in our show notes. I encourage you to reach out to him. Next week, we're going to have another good friend on, Tony Kaiko of Infinity 5. Tony does a brilliant job of finding the right talent for your firm. We're talking about, should you be developing yourself, listeners, as you want to expand your career? Be sure to check out next week's podcast. Tune in for it, because the interview with Tony Kaiko is awesome. You're going to love it. Special thank you to our sponsors, Finastra CMLA, the Lenders One, Incelerate, Mobility MMI, Modex, the MBA, Knowledge Group, and Mortgage Collaborative. And soon coming in is SnapDocs. Very excited about all of this. Have a great week, everybody. Look forward to having you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.